everybody, and welcome back to the Toe Meets Load podcast. I'm Logan, and I'm here today with Andrew and Nigel. Are y'all doing well as always? Andrew, I see you're channeling your inner Cardinal over there.
Man, you know, after what happened to him this week, I got to do something, man. It was just abysmal.
I'm hoping they can bounce back. They're what, 1-2 now after they lost to New England, so that's not surprising, but that happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think the big thing is Carson Palmer's really shown his age, especially against the Bills last week.
Is this going to turn into like our fantasy football group me, where technically this is a college football podcast, but when we turn into, you know, talking about geopolitical issues and NFL scores? Nigel, I see you're getting your munchies on. Are you thinking about college football over there?
Yeah, no, I'm ready to definitely talk about it. It was a good week and should be interesting. And Andrew, I know you're paying. The Lions are also 1-2, but we get to face the Bears, so we'll be 2-2 after Sunday.
How are the Cowboys doing? Just because I know Barbie actually listens to this.
They should be 2-1, I think.
I mean, I've definitely been impressed with Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott.
Yeah, Dak Prescott's been good. No doubt about that. I haven't seen much out of Zeke Elliott, but I haven't really watched them much.
I mean, he's averaging 13 points a week.
In fantasy. Anyway, yeah, I don't know how that translates on the field. So he's scoring 2 touchdowns and kicking an extra point. That's really impressive. All right.
But he's missing the other extra point.
Moving on. We are a college football podcast, after all. So I'd like to kick this week off with a new segment that I'd like to start. I think this is going to be happening every week. Just depends on how games play out. But this segment will be called "What the Fuck Happened at the End of That Game?" There are plenty of candidates this week because I think this segment just applies to weird endings to games or miraculous endings, surprise endings. But I think in this case, there's one particular standout above all the rest, and that would be the LSU at Auburn game. Now, I was watching it. I don't know about you guys. Would you like me to give the summary, or Andrew, would you like to touch on it?
I was actually listening to it on the radio, so if you want to give the summary, it's probably better than I.
Okay, so just a quick recap. Basically what happened was LSU had the ball and was driving down with not much time left on the clock at the end of the fourth quarter. They had to score a touchdown to win the game. I don't remember what the exact score was. I think it was like 15-12 or something weird like that. 15-13. No, 8. I don't remember what the score was. Anyway, it was something they had to score a touchdown to win. So LSU got into a position and they actually had an illegal shift on their second to last play with about 13 seconds left on the clock. But the refs allowed them to play out the snap, which I'm not sure, is that the technical way you're supposed to do an illegal shift?
So from what I could remember, they snapped the ball through an incompletion. There's an illegal shift, and it means that the clock would start on the setting of the ball. And there's only 1 second left. And NC actually recently changed the rule a couple years ago to where unless there's 3 or more seconds remaining, that's not considered enough time to line up and do something. It stems from, I believe, the North Carolina-Tennessee game a couple of years ago where Tennessee had like 15 guys on the field, drew an extra penalty, and would go on to win the game because of it. You know, so it's one of those where there's really not enough time for the ball to set and LSU to immediately snap the ball without the clock ticking to zero. Now, leaning into this, LSU had poor clock management for most of that drive, and it's something that Les Miles has had issues with most of his career at LSU. It just finally really caught up with them. They wasted a good 20-something seconds at a time when they had a timeout, I believe, or they could have just run up and spiked the ball. Instead, they kind of milled around and lost 25 seconds on an incompletion.
Yeah, and to be fair, the refs let them get the snap off. They ran the play. They scored the touchdown if the play had counted. And, of course, LSU went crazy because, you know, they scored the touchdown. They won the game. Clock was over. Went back, reviewed it. There was, like you said, there was 1 second left on the clock after the penalty had been officially called. And there was just no time for them to snap that ball. And when they went back and reviewed it, the refs found they hadn't snapped the ball. Auburn had actually won. And, you know, Auburn was very happy. LSU was very unhappy, and they ended up firing Les Miles. Maybe not specifically over this event, but it sure feels like it. Nigel, how do you feel? Was this the event that got Les Miles finally kicked out of Louisiana?
Well, I mean, the whole circumstance is just interesting because last year we felt like this was going to happen. It was interesting because they renewed his contract or extended it, added more years to it. I guess they were trying to persuade themselves and us in the same boat that, hey, Les Miles, our guy. He just got a top five recruiting class this year. So I'm not sure, was it they were trying to lock in a recruiting class, have faith in that, or were they really felt like he was going to turn it around? I didn't see the pieces in place to make, because the biggest thing for them is their offensive identity. And I just didn't see enough progress on that end. So I don't know. I don't know. This was very weird, four games in. I think the loss of Wisconsin hurt, but Wisconsin has showed that they're a legit team by beating Michigan State this past weekend. But I find it weird. I don't know. They made the change of quarterback. I mean, the quarterback only has so much arm talent. I mean, it was just a very weird circumstance overall.
Well, and to be fair, like
said among them that led to this, to him getting fired. Like, maybe they told him he wasn't going to see that this was going to be last year and he just wanted to go ahead and get it over with. I don't know.
Well, and to be fair, if you watch the last, the drive right before that where LSU had the ball, they just lost it on a fumble and they had driven right down the field up until that point. The quarterback just dropped it and gave it over to Auburn, and then that led Auburn go down the field and put it to a touchdown lead. And that's not Les Miles' fault, but because that happened, that you get put into that position and you've got to run the offense accordingly. Now, Andrew, back to you. So you know more about football than I do. Was that the proper way to handle an illegal shift? Because I thought on an illegal shift, the play is supposed to be blown dead once that occurs.
No, I believe illegal shift is one you play through. You know, the thing about it is they were going to fire Les Miles last year. I mean, you knew it was going to happen. The chum was in the water. The Sharks were circling. He won the game against A&M. His players carried him off the field. And they didn't fire him.
Emotion. It was emotion, right? Like, it was
an
emotion.
And I think it's one of those where, you know, they just didn't have a good opportunity to fire him, even though they knew they wanted to. You know, and I think that LSU, kind of like Georgia in my mind, has got a huge case of Nick Saban envy. Yeah. I think they've both seen what Saban's been able to do at Alabama, and they look at themselves and go, well, why can't we do that? We're going to have the recruits. We're going to have the money. We're going to be able to spend on the facilities. We're going to be able to spend on the coaching staffs. You know, we're going to be able to do all of these things. Why can't we be Alabama? Which is a whole nother discussion in and of itself. I think people keep arguing about, you know, the offense passed him by, the offense passed him by. I mean, offenses work or don't work based upon execution. You know, and that's the thing is, there's no perfect offense, just like outside of certain single wing stuff. But even that, if you look at what Gus Malzahn does, he still runs some of the single wing. Offenses come down to execution. If you don't execute, you're probably not going to win games, regardless of what the scheme is. You know, and I think the other big hit was just he could never develop quarterback talent. You know, you talk about guys like Odell Beckham Jr., you know, Landry, the wide receiver with the Dolphins. I mean, tons of great wide receiver talent coming through, but you really didn't hear about those guys when they were at LSU. You know, he's never really had outside of Jamarcus Russell, but Jamarcus Russell ate himself out of the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the thing that's run in is LSU has decided we should be better than 9-10 wins a year and only one national title. Now, I think if Miles, say he wins that rematch title with Alabama and he's got two national titles and a more recent national title, we might be having a different story. But I really do think that a lot of the SEC, especially your high-end programs, LSU, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, you know, Auburn to an extent, just because they're in the same state with them, have, and even Ole Miss have cases of Alabama envy because they see what Nick Saban's done and think, well, why can't we do that? Which isn't a bad way to think, but you've also got to be careful about, you know, we've kind of seen it as Kirby Smart's, you know, quote unquote, the honeymoon's over after that blowout loss to Ole Miss. Is if you're going to make a change at a coach that wins 9 to 10 games, you better be sure that you can get a better guy, or the guy you bring in is going to be better.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think that this is a sign of, you know, people getting upset with coaches getting 9 wins. I mean, that's kind of a trend we've noticed recently, but to be fair, they gave Les Miles plenty of time. He's been there for a long time. This is a recent trend, though, where he was, I think they were upset with the quarterback, the lack of talent at quarterback, because that's been a recurring trend. They were upset with the poor clock management, because that has lost them some games that they probably should not have lost and made them struggle where they should not, and it's been a recurring theme of his time there. But I think what you're seeing more nowadays is that you can be a good coach. You can be like a 9-10 win yearly coach, and that does not guarantee you the lifetime spot at that program like it used to. You know, we're not going to see Joe Pa era kind of coaches where they just stick around because, you know, they're really good. They might not be the best in the land, but they're really, really good. And you're just not going to see that nowadays, not anymore. Not the way.
And I'll comment also, Logan, since you actually watched the game on TV, I feel like there was clock management at play here, but I feel like the quarterback definitely missed some open receivers from the last couple of series that I lost. But I also saw the receivers weren't actually helping him out any on the catchable balls that were thrown their way. I saw several times where receivers dropped balls, or one of my pet peeves this year, receivers near the sidelines not getting out of bounds in a timely fashion, instead going for 2 and 3 extra yards when instead they could have just gone out of bounds. I felt like it wasn't just clock management. I think the quarterback and the receivers definitely played a hand in it too.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot on all sides of the ball. It was just not a good offensive trend for them. But I don't know that necessarily tends into them actually firing Les Miles, unless you're just looking at the offensive side and they're just overall struggle. Anyway, I'm sorry. We're going to have to move on to the next topic, but Andrew, I'll let you finish with the last statement.
I was going to say, I mean, it's, you know, that comes down to the position coaches. I mean, you're the ones that you work on your 2-minute drill, you teach your guys, you know, just like the defensive coaches, you teach your defensive backs, your other guys making tackles in the 2-minute, the 4-minute drill, play with your back to the sideline, don't let them get to the sideline.
Yep. And I mean, I think you got to also credit Auburn's defense at the end of the day, because they did their job. Anyway, we're going to move on to another loss that hits us close to home. So Georgia Tech got their, depending on your perspective, they either lost or they got their asses handed to them by Clemson. None of us saw us coming except for a traitor in our midst. How's it going, Andrew? But, you know, I think you were probably expecting it. Clemson is a much better team talent-wise than us. But we saw a lot of things that we could improve on in terms of blocking. But the defense, to me, seemed pretty good. You actually saw in the second half, Clemson, what, only scored a field goal, it felt like? Or am I wrong on that?
Yeah, they only kicked a field goal in the second half. You know, and even the first half, you know, we gave up a good bit of yards. We had some issues stopping, especially the jet sweep to Ray McLeod. You know, one of the touchdowns was they throw a back corner fade to 6'2 Mike Williams, defended by 5'10 Lance Alston. You know what I mean? That's a tough thing to win. You know, and that's a matchup, something you've got to play with. You know, I think the defense looked especially good in the second half. And I don't know how much of that was them looking good or Clemson really not thinking they were challenged, which in all honesty, we really never did challenge Clemson. Although I do think if that interception doesn't become a safety, it might be a little different of a game. Because, I mean, that was a 9-point swing.
It certainly would have looked
really
closer.
Killed us.
Yeah, it certainly would have looked better on the scoreboard, at least.
You know, but, I mean, Johnson, even in his press conference after the game, made a comment about he's almost never seen a half like that first half, just how bad we were, both blocking on the perimeter, blocking internally. I mean, Clemson's a fantastic defense. The most athletic defense we'll probably see all year. In my mind, I mean, they're not as scheme strong necessarily as, say, Boston College, who we had a lot of trouble with. You know, but in terms of just pure athleticism and some of those war daddies they've got on that defensive line at Clemson are just unbelievable players. And that's really what killed us, is they got a lot of pressure and push up front, and we couldn't block anyone. We couldn't really block on the perimeter, which was an issue we had last year. So it's going to be interesting to see a Miami defense who's probably going to be pretty athletic, but I believe is young at the second level. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if we get some of these blocking issues fixed, because that's really what we've got to do, is block better on the perimeter, block better on the inside. Because, I mean, if you don't block, it doesn't matter what scheme you're running, you're not going to do anything.
Yeah. Nigel.
No, I agree with Andrew. I will fully admit that interception that turned to a safety pretty much broke me, and I had to go look myself in the mirror after that one, because it was probably one of the most interesting safeties I had ever seen in my life. No, I agree. We stopped the run really well. If you look at, you know, kind of their rush average, there were no really big runs outside of, you know, a couple of QB carries by Watson. And then really it was a short to intermediate passing game. I didn't see, from my perspective, I didn't see any long completions. If they were, it was short passes or intermediate passes turned to big gains. But, you know, Clemson played within itself. It'll be interesting to see them against a much better team in Louisville this upcoming weekend, because I think we played admirably. The score doesn't look as bad as it felt, because like Andrew said, I mean, we just were not in that game in the first half. For us to only lose by, you know, 19 points, it felt like it was a way worse loss than it actually was. So it'll be interesting to see, kind of like Andrew said, kind of if we can fix some of those blocking issues, because there were times where, I mean, Justin Thomas was taking the snap, and, I mean, he had maybe a second, and he had three defenders in his face. There's nothing you can do with that in the first half. So, you know, it'll be interesting. Maybe they switch up, Andrew, you may agree or not agree, that maybe they switch up some of the some of the first and second team, because I felt like, you know, in the second half, there was a lot better blocking. I don't know if that was just, you know, people were getting their assignments down, or they were switching some people out. Some people were getting chances that they normally weren't getting just because of the score and the team that we were playing. So maybe that'll fix some of the issues also.
Yeah. I mean, I want to imagine we're not going to face a defense like that for the rest of the year. They're a number five defense in the nation. And what I saw was they manned us up very well. I'm probably using that term incorrectly, but you see, like in basketball, you play the man defense. Oh, they were lined up perfectly. And I think a lot of coaches will emphasize that the way to defend our offense is discipline. Those guys were man-to-man matched up, going to the edge. They were right where they needed to be, it seemed like, every time that I was watching the first half. It's a rough way to go, but, you know, that's how some of them play out. I'm not as worried about the loss in terms of the numbers, but I do need to see things improve on the offensive end. Otherwise, I'm going to be concerned for our future. To make you feel better, though, Ole Miss shoved the flagpole up Georgia's ass and then hung them up in the rosters of their stadium. So maybe that'll make you feel a little bit on the plus side. Georgia, I think I was talking with Andrew a little bit about this before, they're actually kind of suffering from similar issues to us, in that their O-line is not blocking the way it should. Their defense is also struggling. Nigel, how do you feel about this matchup? I think, like, Georgia's still ranked 25 after the ass-whipping they got handed by Ole Miss. Do you think they deserve to be ranked that high?
They're going to be ranked that high just because it's Georgia. It's in the SEC. But, I mean, honestly, going into this matchup where Georgia was ranked number 12 and Ole Miss was number 23, those should have been flip-flop. Ole Miss was the best two-loss team in the nation. They had lost to two very good teams. I think both still in the top 10 at this point in the year. Jacob Eason has been coddled through the first three games, and then him having to actually face a defense that is competent enough to make him beat them, he wasn't able to do it. It'll be interesting to kind of see, like you said, the blocking, whether that gets fixed. Nick Chubb hasn't really went off since the first game of the year. He was actually hobbled and left out of this game, I think, as more as a precautionary reason. And we actually got to see Holyfield, which was awesome. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see you know, if Ole Miss should be kind of where they maintain their ranking, having, you know, lost the, you know, Florida State and Alabama, whether they're still in the mix. I don't think they're out of the mix. As for Georgia, I think they're going to have a tough road ahead of them, unless they get some offensive line issues fixed really quickly here.
I don't know about that last part. I think Ole Miss might be out of the mix, considering LSU is now dropped out, essentially. I think that's going to be the key issue there, is now that LSU isn't really going to be able to challenge Alabama, who else is Alabama going to lose to? But going back to the game itself, I think, Andrew, you were looking all over a lot more of the technical details. What do you want to tell us about that game?
Yeah, I mean, Georgia's really young on defense. I think they got really exposed by Chad Kelly, who's easily one of the top quarterbacks in the SEC, if not one of the better quarterbacks in the country. You know, he lost some skill guys around him, but he's kind of fallen into a groove. You know, and like Nigel was saying, I mean, Georgia's offensive line is just a train wreck. I don't know what happened between – because they blocked fairly well against North Carolina, but, I mean, then they had issues against Nichols. They didn't play great against Missouri. If Missouri doesn't turn the ball over five times, Georgia doesn't win that game, you know, and they obviously didn't block well against Ole Miss, you know, and that's kind of the thing too, is especially when you've got a young guy like Jacob Eason, you've got to put him in positions to be successful. You've got to give him some time. You know, their wide receivers aren't helping him out. They've had the drops recently. You know, they're kind of a no-name group of wide receivers, you know, to Godwin, Isaiah McKenzie. And then, yeah, I mean, I know the names because I pay attention to Georgia, but they're not names that are really going to, you know, Chigbu, I believe, is one of, you know, guys that should be there to help, but really haven't been helpful for a young quarterback like you'd expect. What's been surprising to me is if I'm Georgia, I'd start involving the tight ends a lot more. You know, they've got great tight ends in Blazevic and Nauta. I mean, Georgia grows great tight ends like no one's business. You know, then they use the fullback a lot against Missouri, which is interesting. You didn't see that as much in the game against Ole Miss, but I think Georgia just was, you know, they were outclassed. It was a true freshman's first start on the road, you know, and you know, and great job to Ole Miss, you know, shaking off the two early, you know, they two games they had 21 point leads and they collapsed. You know, this game they built the lead and they just stuck with it. They didn't fall apart. So it's definitely, I think, a turning corner for that Ole Miss program. Are they out of the playoffs? I think that they would need a lot of help from a lot of other teams around the country. Obviously, you would have to, I think, Alabama have two losses, which I don't see happening on their schedule. But, yeah, you know, I mean, they still have a shot because they are a top team and they've already played Alabama, probably their toughest opponent. Now they've still got to play LSU. They've still got to play what looks like a resurgent Texas A&M team that's really fought to save Sumlin's job, you know, but – I mean, to me, I mean, Ole Miss has shown to be a really good team that's just finally maybe put together two whole halves of football.
Andrew, do you think if Georgia went to almost like a Stanford-type heavy set where they have two tight ends on the field, do you think that would help them?
I'm honestly surprised that they haven't. Like, that was the thing about Georgia, is Georgia under Mark Richt, you could watch them, and they almost wanted to play like LSU did. They wanted to play 21 personnel, two backs, a tight end, and run the ball down your throat, because 9 times out of 10, Georgia's going to have more talent than the team they're playing, and you can really do a lot of those spur-style schemes because of that. This year, they've kind of gotten a little away from that. The first game, I think Jim Chaney called a great game. He ran a lot of tosses. He got Chubb, Heron on the perimeter. He got big guys on little guys. He pulled guards. He pulled tackles. You know, he really worked to get that, and I don't know if he's gotten away from that or they're just not as able to get to the outside as easily as they have. You know, and obviously Chubb's been hurt, but I think Heron, the true freshman, is a good talent. Obviously, Holyfield, you know, got his first game experience, and Sony Michel's still there. You know, so the running back talent isn't the question. It's just the offensive linemen, I think they've got some injuries, and they just haven't been able to really establish like they did against North Carolina. And I don't know if that's just something about North Carolina or that's just something against someone else, but, you know, they should have been able to impose their will against Nichols, and they didn't. You know, I mean, Ole Miss is a great team, so I don't know if they'd impose their will, but I didn't expect them to look that bad.
I mean, it's been trending that way, though. I mean, like, we all picked against Georgia anyway, and you might have called that bias, but like I saw this game coming up, and I'm like, they struggled against Nichols, they barely beat Mizzou, there is no way in hell they're going to beat an Ole Miss team that nearly beat Alabama and had FSU on the ropes until they started turning over things and struggling in the second half. But yeah, that's it's a weird situation to look at. You feel like there's just some minor changes that they need to make because they've certainly got the talent, but they've been struggling all year, and something needs to change. Anyway, we're going to move on. Other teams. So the last big game I really want to talk about is Duke and Notre Dame. We do have some extra games after this, but we're kind of going to run over those. Duke beating Notre Dame. So I think Notre Dame was ranked coming into this year, as they are every year. But they've come out since then. They've lost to Texas. They've lost to Duke. Who was their other loss? They lost to another team, didn't they?
Michigan State,
that's right. And so, you know, Texas and Michigan State, you've got an argument. Okay, those teams look pretty good, but we really hadn't seen much out of them until they played Notre Dame. And now they lose to Duke, who has frankly been terrible up until this point. What does this loss say about Notre Dame this year? Is this the worst Notre Dame team we've seen in maybe a decade, in a long time? I'll start with Andrew.
Well, it's already cost Brian Van Gorder his job. You know, and I think that's the biggest thing that you can take away is the really talented Notre Dame defense last year. Where have they gone? You know, I know they lost Sheldon Day. I know they lost Jaylen Brown. You know, I know they lost some talent off of that defense, but you don't expect a regression that far, that fast. You know, and, you know, the offense played well. You know, looking at the stats from the game, it was, you know, Notre Dame outgained Duke. You know, it turnovers. Notre Dame, 3 turnovers. Again, turnovers are never going to help you. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things. But, you know, I mean, it gave up 5.0 yards per rush. You know, Duke ran for 208 yards. Yeah, that's my thing, is that defense has just collapsed. I don't know what's happened. I don't know, you know, everyone that I've known that's worked with Van Gorder, you know, I don't personally care for Van Gorder for my own reasons, but, you know, he's a good coach. And that's the thing, is coaches don't just all of a sudden forget how to coach. That's not how it works. You get out scheme, you don't execute, you know, you lose a lot of talent. And I don't know, you know, that's going to be an interesting thing, is how that defense progresses. And if it doesn't, then, you know, Notre Dame might be in for another long, long season.
Yeah, but,
you know, looking at.
It's not about coaches knowing how to coach. It's about boosters being fickle, and they are very fickle.
Well, I mean, it's Notre Dame. I mean, they're going to be that way, you know. But, I mean, even their defense, actually, they're not very good in points against. But, I mean, they've got a tough schedule. You know, they've got Stanford. They've got Miami. They've got Virginia Tech, who's looked really good this year. They've got USC, who is pretty much a dumpster fire. So we really know who can get there. But they have to play Navy and Army, which are two teams that really like to run the football. And if Notre Dame has a lot of trouble stopping teams from running the football, those are going to be some long games.
Hell, at this point, USC might even challenge them. Nigel, after him listing off that schedule, what do you think? Can Notre Dame make a bowl game?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. As soon as you start listing off those teams, Syracuse, I think they should beat Syracuse. They should beat NC State, and maybe I'm going on the allure that is Notre Dame on that. I think they should beat Army, and I'm not confident in that. They should beat USC. So I see, what, five wins on their schedule? No, 4 wins on their schedule?
Well, they already won a game, keep in mind. So that's 5. Yeah.
Yeah, so 5. And that's beating all those teams. And Syracuse has shown at least some offensive improvement. Army has definitely shown improvement. If USC, that's their last game of the year, maybe USC wants to go out strong at the end of the year. I think USC is better than it's looked. Obviously, they're not a great team, but, I mean, maybe Notre Dame is just giving it in at the end of the year, so I don't know. I agree with everything Andrew said. Offensively, they were fine, and I thought it made a big statement that Van Gorder was fired, because everything was pointing to the players not handling their assignments, and for him to just come out, that was actually, like, overshadowed, obviously, by Les Miles being fired, but Andrew's right. Like, the defense from this year to last year, it was crazy how bad it's just taking steps back. And it's really on the line. I don't see them really getting as much push as they used to.
Well, and Brian Kelly is getting angry at his players. I think what he threatened them at training this week, he was like, look, all of your jobs are on the line. My job is on the line. This, we can't do this again. I'm like, we're trending back into negative aspects because he's always had those anger issues and he's been doing a good job of dealing with them when Notre Dame was winning. But overall, if this keeps up, the program's not looking to be heading in a good direction.
You know, and if they miss a bowl game, he might not have a job. You know, I mean, Notre Dame's one of those places where, yeah, he played for a national title in 2012 and got rocked, put together some good years, got rocked by Ohio State in the bowl game last year. And, I mean, if they miss a bowl game, they're not a place that likes to sit around and hold on to coaches that aren't winning, especially, you know, with a place like LSU having done what they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course Notre Dame's also one of those places where their boosters are like, hell, we could get the hoodie out of New England. We could
hire Nick Saban. He'll come to Notre Dame.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I don't know why the Notre Dame fans have a Southern accent, but yeah, they totally could.
And by the way, Logan, one person was safe. The long snapper, he's safe.
Oh, is that right? Is that right? He was perfect for his long snaps?
Yeah, they were like, his long snaps were the major key. So, you know, he's safe.
I don't know. We're saying all this, but watch them end up like 6-6 and still be ranked 25th in the nation at the end of the year, because that's what the poll loves to do.
So's quality losses, bro.
Anyway, moving on. We're kind of going to brush over the rest of these games. But, Nigel, I'd like you to talk about this one. So, Tennessee continues to miraculously pull out games. Like, I'm not even sure how they beat Florida. Florida had them had their number completely through the first half, and then Tennessee just turned around and decided, "Oh yeah, we remembered how to play football. Yeah, we can do this now. You get the ball in the end zone, right?" And Florida did nothing in the second half. I don't know. Maybe somebody got paid. What happened in that game?
I like for all our listeners to know that Logan has bet me $50 that Tennessee will win more than 9 games.
No,
I just wanted that on the record.
They will win 9 games, not more than 9 games.
I'm sorry, they will win at least 9 games. I almost want to not answer this through civil disobedience because I am literally rooting for Georgia this weekend because Tennessee has gotten away with murder. In every game this season, they have either been behind or the team has had them on the ropes and for some reason will not step on their neck. Tennessee does just enough to stay in the game, or the other team does just enough to allow them to stay in the game, and for some reason they're able to come back. I don't know where Joshua Dobbs is in his own head. He's doing just enough. They seem to thrive on the big play, which I think will end up catching up with them. He was only 16 for 32 for 319 yards. It was just big completion after big completion after big completion. And the thing was, is that the Florida corners are actually really good. So it was just mistakes on their part. They weren't getting as much of a pass rush. They were turning the ball over, which is crazy because Tennessee was turning the ball over. It was just Tennessee was just able to capitalize on the turnovers they were generating. And I need somebody to beat Tennessee. And Logan, it's not even about the bet. It's just Tennessee is on borrowed time right now, and it's just pissing me off.
I would love to see Ohio beat Tennessee, to be honest, regardless of our bet. But sadly, they could not pull it out. All right. Andrew, I'll let you get quick seconds. Any words on Tennessee?
That's just a game that shows that great halftime adjustments can win you games.
That's all it was, a tale of two halves, man.
I mean, I didn't get a chance to watch much of the game, but, I mean, when you score 38 unanswered points coming out of halftime, like...
What's the other team to do, man?
I don't know what it is, but...
No, that was funny, because that was one of those games where I kind of, like, turned it off after the first half, because, like, well, there's no way they come back. And then, like, suddenly I see the score jumping up, and I'm like, oh, well, shit, now I got to watch this, and I've got to watch... What was the other game I was watching at the time? Shit. There were a lot of games going on at 3:30, but yeah, that game surprised me. Another surprise, Andrew, I'm going to trend to your side this time. Stanford was your big team coming into the year. They did struggle against UCLA, maybe didn't look quite as good as they did the week before against USC, but they pulled out a win. I think the biggest game that they have left on their schedule is next week against Washington.
It's on Friday.
Oh, sorry. Well, yeah, sorry. This week against Washington, but either way, yeah, it's coming up. So, I mean, is there any? Are you worried about them going into that match after their performance against UCLA, or do you think they're going to come in, win that game, and then just roll the rest of the way?
You know, I think it's going to be a tough game because I think Washington is a good team. Now, I'm not sure if Washington's really played anyone. You know, looking back at their schedule, they really haven't. I mean, Arizona was probably the best team they've played, and I believe that one went to overtime. But, you know, Washington's known to have a pretty good defense. Their young offense has really kind of come along. You know, that game is in Seattle, which is going to be tough. But, you know, I think Stanford's just, you know, they're a team that even their – none of their wins have been pretty, but they've won the game. They've gotten done what they needed to do to win the game. And, you know, and I think that'll be the thing again. You know, Ryan Burns is really kind of coming into his own as a quarterback. Obviously, you've got Christian McCaffrey, but – you know, Stanford's just a team that keeps doing what they need to do to make plays and win the game. And I think they'll beat Washington, you know, and I don't know if their schedule's too tough after that. They do have to travel to Notre Dame. And they get a resurgent Colorado, which Colorado beat Oregon. That was really kind of confusing.
Yeah, Colorado is the surprise of the Pac-12 right now. Oh, my gosh. And their performance against Michigan was actually very good, too. So That conference just got a lot more interesting, I would say. Next game. So all of us here picked UNC. Tommy couldn't be here. I think we all wanted to stay on Elizabeth's happy side, but that actually turned out to be way, way more exciting of a game than I expected it to be. Was that the game that's officially decided the Coastal, Nigel, now that UNC has won? I mean, those were the two big teams out of the Coastal other than Miami.
No, I know Elizabeth's not going to want to hear this, but no, not yet. Like you said, Miami's still in the mix. I feel like Virginia Tech, they only have, they're still in the mix. I feel like Georgia Tech is still in the mix. You know, so I want to see maybe in, you know, 2 to 3 more weeks, we'll be able to, you know, tell kind of how things are going to fall. But UNC has looked pretty good outside of that one loss to Georgia that now may come back to bite them depending on how Georgia ends up this year. And Pitt has definitely done well this year. I think that was their first loss this year. So, you know, Pitt's still in the mix. Obviously, they need UNC to lose twice now. But UNC could legitimately lose twice this year. I need to look at their schedule for sure, but I think they play – Florida State this year, if I remember correctly. Elizabeth, I know she has them memorized, so she's going to come back.
They play Florida State this week, Nigel.
Okay, so
at Florida State this weekend.
So that could be a loss for them, and then that could, you know, put Pitt back in the mix at least if they lose to either Miami, Virginia Tech, or Georgia Tech.
Fair enough. And Andrew, I saw you casting magic on your camera, and you seem to have a lot to say. So. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with Nigel. I think we still don't know enough about the Coastal. You know, Virginia Tech's looked really good against everyone they've played. They had fumble issues, which is where it really killed them against Tennessee, but they've really blown out everyone else they've played, including a Boston College team that we thought had a really, really great defense. You know, Miami's looked great against suspect competition. You know, Miami gets Georgia Tech this weekend, which will be kind of their first, you know, real challenge, if you want to call it that. Yeah, I'm seeing who Virginia Tech plays this weekend.
Are they on bye?
Yeah, they're actually on a bye week, and they'll play North Carolina the week after. So, you know, that's another question, is Virginia Tech's looked really impressive. They haven't really played anybody. The only team they played, they lost the turnovers. You know, North Carolina looked impressive. The defense kind of stepped up in the second half, and Pitt really didn't take advantage of the chances they had to extend and push that lead. And Pitt looked good. That Pitt offense really, you know, it was really fun to watch because they did some things that I didn't expect them to do. They went unbalanced a lot with a tackle over. They ran a lot of misdirection. You know, the OC there is a guy that got fired at NC State, so you really don't know what to expect from him. But, you know, I mean, I think the Coastal, again, we've got teams that are so close together talent and execution-wise that, you know, it's going to play it out. And I think you're going to have some more muddled, this guy beat this team, which beat this other team, that beat this other team. So, you know, we're going to end up with tiebreakers again, like we always seem to most years. Because, like I said, all of the teams, I think you're going to see a lot of games like Carolina Pitt, close games down to the wire. Somebody has to make a play. You know,
yes.
Ryan Switzer made my Fish report this week because he had a career game for Carolina.
Yes. Another ACC clusterfuck to look forward to. So, really quick, two more things I want to talk about. Andrew, I'll just let you handle this one. So, Army's finally lost. It's all over. We're doomed. They're never going to win again. What else you got to say about Army?
Oh, I don't think that they're never going to win again. You know, obviously, I mean, it was an overtime loss to Buffalo. They're at Duke this week, which is going to be interesting. The next two after that are Lafayette and North Texas, which are very winnable games. You know, I don't know if they'll be able to handle, you know, currently undefeated Wake Forest, who's really kind of been one of the surprises of the ACC. You know, then they get Air Force at home. They have to play Notre Dame. I think that there's still a strong chance that Army can win six games and make a bowl game. I think it's still very much on the table, you know, and I think that would be a great step in the right direction for Jeff Munkin.
Fair enough. All right. And then a question for both of you. So Michigan State got taken down by Wisconsin, and I don't think, unless you're a Wisconsin fan, I think most of us did not see this game coming because Wisconsin struggled against Georgia State. And other than that early win against LSU, they really haven't had much to stand on. Is this more about Wisconsin being good or about Michigan State not being, I don't want to say being bad, but probably not as talented as we thought they were? And Nigel, I'll start with you.
Why not both? I think Michigan State definitely has taken a step back. They haven't been able to run the ball. Usually with Michigan State teams, you're going to get a team that is just finely tuned. They're not going to make a lot of mistakes. They're going to keep the game close. They've been turning the ball over left and right, and really didn't come back to bite them in the Notre Dame game, but it definitely came back to bite them against Wisconsin. Wisconsin has one of the best defenses in the nation. Top 10 defense, if I remember correctly, after this weekend. They're going to win the turnover battle. They won the turnover battle this weekend, and they've been doing it all year. They have a quarterback that can actually legitimately make plays. You have Corey Clemens, who's back and healthy. So I think Wisconsin is definitely in the mix. Between them and Nebraska on the opposite side of the Big Ten, they're going to be able to oppose Michigan and Ohio State. And I think Michigan State's still in there. I don't think they're just completely out of the mix yet, but they're going to be able to oppose those teams. And that's where you see the Big Ten overall getting more recognition than it did last year, where the Big Ten was just really lopsided on one side and you had Iowa on the other side.
All right. And Andrew, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think I owe an apology to Badger Nation. You know, I really wasn't very high on Wisconsin going into the season. I thought they had too many losses, especially losing Dave Aranda as the defensive coordinator, but I mean, they've proven me wrong, and they've looked pretty good. You know, they, in my mind, them and Nebraska have to be the favorites to win that side of the Big Ten. You know, it's going to be interesting. They've got Michigan this week, and I think Wisconsin also has to play Ohio State. So I don't think, yeah, they have to play Ohio State the week after this, or 2 weeks after this. You know, I don't think they've really, the scheduling gods have done them any favors. But, I mean, that's one of those where if they can come out, you know, if they can win one of the next two, then they definitely, in my mind, easily get into the conversation of the best team in the Big Ten with an outside shot at the playoffs.
All right. Well, with that said, we're done with all our game recap. Andrew, would you like to go into your Fish report?
So, fortunately for Fish Smithson, Kansas did not lose this week. They successfully navigated the bye week.
Unfortunately, he has no stats coming out of that week.
So he has no stats for this week. Weston Steelhammer in an Air Force, close Air Force win over Utah State, had a pretty great game, 6 solo tackles, 3 assisted tackles, and his first tackle for a loss, which gives him on the season 9 solos, 6 assisted, 1 tackle for a loss, and 2 PBUs. Huge, huge game this week for the Zoomies, where they play – they host the Navy midshipmen, which would be a fantastic game. You know, some other shout-outs from the Fish report. Kurt Benkert. So, you know, Kurt Benkert. Interesting name. Quarterback at Virginia. And Virginia's first win of the season, where they knocked off the Chippewas of Central Michigan. Went 27 of 43 for 421 yards and 5 touchdowns.
Transitive property. He is better than Oklahoma State. There you go.
And then, you know, the two shout-outs I also want to give is Trevor Knight for Texas A&M, who had 225 yards passing and 157 yards rushing, two touchdowns of each for four total touchdowns. You know, Texas A&M has been really kind of one of the surprise teams of the SEC and kind of the year. And then Syracuse, you know, Dino Babers has started to turn that program around. You're definitely seeing it in the passing game, where senior wide receiver Amba Etta Tawo, transfer from Maryland.
Wait. Say that again.
Amba Etta Tawo.
Okay. I just want to make sure
he's
look.
He's actually from Powder Springs, Georgia. He played high school ball at McEachern. He had his second 200-yard game of the year and his second 12-catch game of the year. He had 12 catches for 270 yards and two touchdowns against Connecticut. His numbers on the season, 40 catches for 706 yards and five touchdowns in four games.
Damn. And a guy, this is at Syracuse. That's pretty impressive.
Like I said, they may not be winning a lot of games, but Babers has definitely changed Syracuse on offense.
Yeah, I don't think he'll get fired for that. No, and not Syracuse. All right.
Well, like I said, shout out to Ryan Switzer at North Carolina.
More points. More points with North Carolina, more points with Elizabeth. All right. Well, Nigel, we're going to move into your area of expertise and talk about the stock market. So we just talked about Tennessee and Georgia, and you're going into that game. I don't know what to think anymore about those teams. Why don't you tell us, are you buying or selling, or are you just going to stay because that market is too chaotic?
I'm definitely going to stay on both Georgia and Tennessee. Tennessee, I think, is playing with fire. They may end up going. I don't think they're going undefeated because they have to play both Alabama and Texas A&M this year still. But Tennessee might be the team to beat in the SEC East, and Georgia's still not out of the mix yet. So I'm going to stay on both those teams. The one futures that I'm going to look into is Tom Herman not being at Houston. The more and more I see the college landscape opening up with these coaching positions, I know he said that it will take, you know, probably a momentous effort to get him out of Houston. Houston is looking really good right now. But if Houston does not make it to the Big Ten, I think he's going to end up going to one of the, either LSU or one of the big positions that I think is going to open up at the end of the year.
Hmm. LSU or Notre Dame, you think? Huh. Interesting. That would be a trip, that's for sure. All right, well, I was hoping Tommy would be here with some useless facts or some conspiracy theories. Anybody got some conspiracy theories about why they fired Les Miles and they're going to immediately hire Les Miles back at LSU?
Well, I thought they were trying to hold on to Cam Cameron. I thought it was because he was strapping himself to Cam Cameron, but apparently Cam Cameron was safe, and an article came out this, you know, that I shared with you guys. Cam Cameron was safe. Ed Orgeron was the one who ended up firing him and not strapping himself to that offensive coordinator because he knew better.
Yeah, I thought that was a smart move by Ed Orgeron, but I just like Ed Orgeron in general, so, you know, that's my
Yeah, stance. You know, I mean, I'm a big fan of Coach O. I mean, I think my favorite conspiracy is that I saw somewhere that there was a picture of one of the LSU official jets on the tarmac in Morganton, West Virginia, after Les Miles had gotten fired. So,
looking out there,
West Virginia.
West Virginia hasn't been very happy with their coach anyway, though.
Not been a fan of Dana Holgorsen, which, you know, if LSU, you know, go from the Mad Hatter, Dana Holgorsen's not exactly a squeaky clean, button-down, normal kind of guy.
No, he isn't.
But will he eat the grass? That's the real question.
He might.
All right. Anyway. I think that's going to wrap us up, unless you've got more insights to the coaching carousel that I don't know about.
I think LSU immediately becomes the best job available.
Yeah, I mean, it's just too open right now, because clearly LSU is the best job available, and there's going to be more positions opening up if the boosters are going to be as angry as those guys are. But I mean, right now there's too much left in the season to really tell who's going to be available and what positions are going to be open.
Yeah, I mean, plus if you're a current coach, you're not going to really talk about any of this till the end of the season. So even if LSU wants to hire Tom Herman, I mean, Herman's not going to make any commitments until after the season. You know, and the only other job opening, the only other two jobs opening that could open up that could rival the LSU job are if Notre Dame misses a bowl game and they can Brian Kelly, or if Charlie Strong misses a bowl game and Texas fires him. Other than that, I think LSU is one of those upper echelon top 10 jobs in the country that, you know, has a chance at everyone not named Urban Meyer, Nick Saban, or Bill Belichick.
You don't think that Saban's suddenly going to decide to retire like everybody seemed to think he was going to do last year? Like, oh, man.
I've heard stories from Saban's people that he on some level regrets leaving LSU. But I don't think he jumped ship from Alabama to LSU.
I don't know why he would. Like, damn,
I think he needs to win. I think he needs to surpass Bear Bryant before he retires anyways.
I think that's what he's trying to do.
Seriously, like, he's going to do that, and then he's going to drop the mic and, like, fade into the background.
In the mind,
he and Bill Belichick are going to go star in a buddy cop drama.
Oh my god, I would so watch that.
I was about to ask this though. Like, yeah, I feel like the LSU boosters must be thinking to themselves, yeah, we got a good chance at Bill Belichick. You know, Tom Brady's going to have to retire. Why would he want to stay in New England? Oh my gosh. Anyway, yeah, that's going to wrap us up for today on the weekly recap. As always, you can check us out at tomeatsleather.net for more wordy posts, and check in with our friend Tommy, who cannot be here this week. Till then, have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.